must change my ways. Change my ways. Those evil ways. So I set out, cross that way, strike them down to make them pay. Change their ways, their evil ways. But I can't.
Top of the third hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast. What happened in America? Top of the third hour this Wednesday, October 30th, 2019. What has happened? What happened over the last 35 years or so? That's kind of what we're talking about. So, you know, the Fabian influence in particular, and the Reese committee hearings, the testimony, and we're at the point that that infamous meeting that was held September 12, 1905 at Peck's Restaurant in downtown New York, that included Jack London, obviously, and he was the intellectual spark of the time. These socialist progress clubs and things. And in this case, the Intercollegiate Socialist Society, the ISS, which began in 1905. So what's the issue? Mr. Hayes and Mr. Sargent are going back and forth in Reese Committee hearings, proceedings, talking about Jack London. Sargent says he was a member of a radical intellectual elite that came in here definitely to try to twist our institutions around in favor of the organized socialist movement. And Sargent says some of the background extends further back than that. That is a definite identifiable date. And people don't realize, you know, it sounds as though Hayes is trying to say, you're saying, I mean, that was like 50 years ago, dude, what's your problem? But people don't realize that's the Fabian model. Precisely, the protracted war of attrition, wearing people out by attrition over generations, period of years, and even generations, decades, advancing at glacial speed in Fabian fashion. So Hayes, you know, and again, Hayes and Sargent were at odds, essentially, diametrically opposed in their views, you might say. So Hayes says they did a lot of twisting, I assume. Sargent, they sure did. Hayes, we have resisted pretty well for 50 years, haven't we? Sargent, have we? Hayes, I'm asking you, what do you think? And Sargent responds, I think we departed very materially. Among other things, it is plainly asserted and charged today that the doctrine of inalienable rights and natural laws as set forth in the Declaration of Independence is obsolete. They have accomplished that false belief in the American mind. And so Hayes persists. Now, Mr. Sargent, you would not want to take a poll down on the street and ask the first 100 people you meet if they believe that. Sargent, no. I'm talking about the slanting of the courts and the governmental procedure. Hayes, all the courts have been undermined too? Sargent, somewhat, yes. Hayes, Congress too, I suppose? Anyway, it's an interesting exchange. So from there, I think we'll return back to Epperson's Unseen Hand, Ralph Epperson's The Unseen Hand, Chapter 36, Education, and pick up from there on how education was altered in America to endorse Fabian socialism, or otherwise known as democratic socialism, a term that has come back into vogue in recent years. You know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I don't understand how a person like that, any of the Justice Democrats, how do they have any credibility? To me, it defies logic. But then it's a post-truth world, so I guess it has nothing to do with logic, does it? So, continuing, William Z. Foster. Foster had aligned himself with the teachings of Karl Marx, who wrote this plank in the Communist Manifesto to assist the communists in communizing the, quote, most advanced countries. Number 10, free education for all. And by the way, Marx was a hack, a plagiarist, which is that has been clearly established by folks like Anthony Sutton, for example. And that's another thing you can find if you go to that article I mentioned, Free Britain Now, Socialism Exposed. It's one of the points that is clearly – let's see. Yeah. A working class ideology. You know, just a brief excerpt from that. Another revealing aspect of socialism is the nature and origin of its ideology, of which writings like the Communist Manifesto are a case in point. One of the earliest socialistic publications was Clinton Roosevelt's booklet, The Science of Government, 1841, which advocated a totalitarian system similar to the one suggested in Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto. And that's drawn from Anthony Sutton's The Federal Reserve Conspiracy. And just continue with that excerpt briefly. In 1843, another booklet entitled Principles of Socialism, Manifesto of Democracy in the 19th Century was published by a certain Frenchman of the name Victor Considerant, while Marx and Engels were working for the Paris Franco-German Annals. What a coincidence. The booklet was reprinted in 1847 when Marx and Engels, who were then in exile in Brussels, joined the London Communist League. In November, the duo was commissioned by the League's central authority to compose a document presenting a statement of its beliefs and aims. Engels had already produced a draft document called The Principles of Communism in October 1847, that is, and the duo used this as a basis for their Manifesto of Communist Party, which was sent to London for printing in February 1848. As shown by W. Chernyshev in his Pages of Socialist History, 1902, the manifesto is in fact based on Victor Considerant's Principles of Socialism, and therefore cannot be the original work of Marx and Engels. That again from Anthony Sutton's Federal Reserve Conspiracy. So, interesting stuff, I would say. All right. Back to education, chapter 36 of Ralph Epperson's The Unseen Hand. So, Communist Manifesto, plank number 10, free education for all. What a great thing. People will say, well, Jefferson advocated that. No, he didn't advocate propaganda. He advocated 3 years maximum, you know, the general diffusion of knowledge, bill for the more general diffusion of knowledge. And what's interesting, when Jefferson introduced his bill for the more general diffusion of knowledge in 1779, people were so because of the historical backdrop, you know, they were horrified at the prospect of a centralized education system. It was a legitimate concern. and along came Horace Mann and hijacked the concept not too many years later. Anyway, continuing, Marx, like Hitler, Lenin, and the Communist Party USA, realized that if they could control the education of the young, they could control the economic and social life the young would live under. And if all believed the same things, there would be no opposition to the state. This was confirmed when Bertrand Russell, who wrote about an educator, Johann Gottlieb Fitta, who Russell claimed, quote, laid down that education should aim at destroying free will, so that after pupils are thus schooled, they will be incapable of thinking or acting otherwise than as their schoolmasters would have wished. Russell went on to explain elsewhere, quote, diet, injections, and injunctions will combine from a very early age to produce the sort of character and the sort of beliefs that the authorities will consider desirable, and any serious criticism of the powers that be will become psychologically impossible. Even if all are miserable, all will believe themselves to be happy because the government will tell them that it is so, end quote. The new pattern of using the schools to mold the character the government wants has been furthered by a national union of school teachers, the National Education Association, the NEA. And by the way, it's not what the government wants, it's what a coterie of folks who hide behind the ostensible government want. Continuing, in one of their reports entitled Education in the 70s, the NEA wrote, schools will become clinics whose purpose is to provide individualized psychosocial treatment for the student, and teachers must become psychosocial therapists. This will include biochemical and psychological mediation of learning, as drugs are introduced experimentally to improve in the learner such qualities as personality, concentration, and memory. Children are to become the objects of experimentation. And Ralph Epperson includes such experimentation, quote-unquote, on children today includes the use of the drug Ritalin to improve the behavior of certain of the students. But it wasn't always this way. And, you know, that's another thing. We just keep moving along the dialectical continuum. You look at these ads now. They tell you in the ads, they don't even ask you, they don't even, well, it's paid actors in Milgram experiment fashion. And the ads used to say, ask your doctor if this is right for you. They don't even say that anymore. They tell you it might not work. They tell you side effects may include death. And they just say, ask your Walmart healthcare professional if, you know, ask this person about that. The other thing that I think of when I think of this issue of social engineering and experimenting on children, speaking of Russell's impact of science on society, this excerpt from Chapter 2, General Effects of Scientific Technique, which calls to mind Jacques Ellul and the technocrats. The way that Bertrand Russell wrote it, I think the subject which will be of most importance politically is mass psychology. And of the, you know, there are a number of methods. He said of these, you know, its importance has been enormously increased by the growth of modern methods of propaganda. Modern methods of propaganda. What are those? He wrote, of these, the most influential is what is called education, quote unquote. Modern method of propaganda? Religion plays a part, though a diminishing one. Depressed the cinema and the radio have an increasing part. What is essential in mass psychology is the art of persuasion. That's what education amounts to these days, the art of persuasion, so-called education. Skipping ahead, he wrote, it may be hoped that in time anybody will be able to persuade anybody of anything if they can catch the patient the patient, young, and is provided by the state with money and equipment. The social psychologists of the future will have a number of classes of school children on whom they will try different methods of producing an unshakable conviction that snow is black. Various results will soon be arrived at. First, that the influence of home is obstructive. Second, that not much can be done unless indoctrination begins before the age of 10. Third, that verses set to music and repeatedly intoned are very effective. Fourth, that the opinion that snow is white must be held to show a morbid taste for eccentricity. But I anticipate it is for future scientists to make these maxims precise and discover exactly how much it costs per head to make children believe that snow is black and how much less it would cost to make them believe it is dark gray. Although this science will be diligently studied, it will be rigidly confined to the governing class. The populace will not be allowed to know how its convictions were generated. Another interesting little excerpt. So, back to chapter 36, Education of the Unseen Hand. So the Americans did not turn their children over to the state to be educated by them in the beginning. In fact, the original schools in America were private, basically Christian schools, where the children were taught by the parents or by teachers hired by the parents. Now, if we looked at that model now, how inexpensive would that be by contrast? Would there really be the scarcities that we hear about? We have to cut programs. We should just centralize it all and have max headroom teaching children from who knows where in every classroom across America, maybe around the world. Just be easier. Wouldn't it be so much more cost effective? The original textbook was the Bible, and all expenses were paid for by the parents who wished their children to be taught as the parents wished. Imagine. Show me where man gets his corn pone, and I'll tell you what his opinions is. Corn pone opinions. Even America's founding fathers feared for the safety of their children by keeping the original government from the education of the young. James Madison, for one, voiced his opposition to the use of government to teach children. Quote, if Congress can employ money indefinitely to the general welfare, they may appoint teachers in every state. The powers of Congress would subvert the very foundation, the very nature of the limited government established by the people of America. Limited government? What is that? How am I supposed to get an Obama phone and a universal basic income with limited government, for Pete's sake? I want free stuff. But even then, there were forces at work designing state or national education plans for the American people. The first law of such a nature was passed in 1642 by the Massachusetts legislature, which required parents to teach their children to read the English language and to teach the principles of religion. This law was, and you know, well, I won't even mention that. This law was followed by another in 1647, requiring cities of over 50 householders in population to teach children to read and write. Those communities with over 100 families or householders had to set up a grammar school, the first public schools in the United States. Thomas Jefferson, certainly a man of mixed principles, submitted a bill to the Virginia legislature in 1779 that would have established a compulsory statewide public school system, but the Virginians were not accepting his proposal and refused to vote for the bill. We're going to get to Robert Owen. Robert Owen, the original American communist? Anyway, well, he wasn't American, but, you know, stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. Heart disease is taking our youth from us. Young people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond are dying needlessly. One of the hardest messages I've ever had to deliver is to convince people that something natural like Extendivite should be taken as a preventative measure. I'm sure you heard, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Extendivite is that ounce. Take Extendivite for 1 year and see what your doctor has to say and how much better you feel. Herbs take time to address the problem. It took years of life to have a problem. Give Extendivite 1 year to fix the problem. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or visit us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Robert Owen, Utopian Socialism, you know, which is, like climate science, Why do you have to stick utopian on it? We wrote a utopian constitution, the utopian United States of America, utopian socialism. So Ralph Epperson's The Unseen Hand, Chapter 36, Education. Robert Owen. No, you're not getting it. You're not getting it. It's, this is what it is. Oh, wait, we need to back up. So, Virginians were not accepting of Jefferson's bill for the more general diffusion of knowledge introduced in 1779. But the remainder of the states, with the exception of Massachusetts, continued allowing the parents to teach their children without laws in public schools. Imagine. What an outrage. Allowing parents to guide and direct the education of their own children. Inconceivable. Allowing parents to teach their children. The way our thinking has been reordered. There were those who persisted in their efforts to involve the federal or state governments in the process of educating the children of the nation. One of these was the father of modern socialism, quote unquote, Robert Owen. Mr. Owen, a supporter of the voluntary method of proving that socialism would work, started a special school for the children of the mill workers at his socialist experiment known as New Lanark, Scotland. He started the education of these children at the age of one, but his attempts to teach socialism to the children of his workers failed when his socialist experiment failed. Mr. Owen came to the United States in 1825 started another socialist experiment, this time in New Harmony, Indiana. He called it, quote, the focus of enlightened atheism. Funny how that always happens. Owen, who believed that man's character had been deformed, quote, deformed by religious brainwashing, end quote. It's funny how, there's always that too. Once again started his school for the children of the mill workers, and once again in 1826 the experiment failed. The great lesson learned by Owen and his followers was that education had to precede the creation of a socialist society. Why? You got to indoctrinate people first. And it's always been interesting to me to see what happens in the public school combines these days. People think that it's no big deal. They don't realize the fracturing of the logic process of a young mind when you have, for example, a banner in a cafeteria. Never mind that issue. The banner in the cafeteria has a big red circle and a big red line through it and the word drugs. The circle and the line through drugs. No drugs. But most of these – well, not most, but a large contingent of these – children are on prescription medication. So drugs are bad, but they're being prescribed drugs. That fractures the logic process in a young mind. Don't worry about it. Don't worry, they'll get critical thinking and logic and rhetoric in graduate school. It's okay. Great lesson learned by Owen and his followers was that education had to precede the creation of a socialist society. In other words, the American people were not yet ready to accept socialism. And from that moment on, they decided that they would promote national public education as the preliminary step to socialism. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Okay, nurse, let's get this man to the ER, stat. Right away, doctor.
We see this every day. Heart attack or angina pain due to blocked and clogged arteries. Chelation can remove obstructions or blockages from arteries and help avoid painful and expensive surgery. Now there's Angioprim. It's a liquid oral chelation product that you take with juice. You start to feel the results fast. Angioprim increases blood flow all over the body, and that means more energy and strength to take on the day with less aches and pains. 60 years of research has gone into chelation. And Angioprim is the result, a safe and easy way to unblock your veins and arteries from buildup that slow circulation.
Paging Dr. Jones, please report to the emergency room right away.
Log on now to Angioprim.com. That's Angioprim.com. Or to speak with a trained consultant, give Angioprim a call at 954-882-7221. That's 954-882-7221.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
Sunday, Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. The weekend comes, my cycle humps, ready to race to you. These days are
bottom of the third hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast this Wednesday, October 30th, 2019, the Utopian Socialist. It's interesting. Just a couple of things. We'll go to the phones here in a second. So from the Wikipedia entries, I'm just going to bounce for a second. One key difference between Utopian Socialists and other socialists, really, parenthetically, including most anarchists, is that Utopian Socialists generally do not believe any form of class struggle or political revolution is necessary for socialism to emerge. Utopians believe that people of all classes can voluntarily adopt their plan for society if it is presented convincingly. Aha, the art of persuasion. The hidden persuaders. If it is present their plan for society, if it is presented convincingly. You can voluntarily adopt. You can, you know, voluntary compliance. One of those deals. They feel their form of cooperative socialism can be established among like-minded people within the existing society, and that their small communities can demonstrate the feasibility of their plan for society. Their plan. And, you know, so utopian socialism, exemplified by the works of Henry de Saint-Simon, Charles Fourier, Etienne Cabet, and Robert Owen. Saint-Simon, interesting guy. Pierre Joseph Proudhon, Marxism, Marx Engels, John Stuart Mill. Saint-Simon and his secretary Auguste Comte developed ideas that Comte would market as sociology. Saint-Simon's views also influenced 20th century sociology and sociologist and economist Thorsten Veblen, technocrat Thorsten Veblen. You know, so those are some interesting little points along the way as well in sort of fleshing out this beast of socialism. To the phones, David in California, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Yeah, how are you, Chris? Did you ever read Ben Franklin's old autobiography?
Yes.
Well, there's a section in there, and I'm stumped if it happened before the American Revolution or if it was right afterward. But he talks about how sorry he was that he took a trip over to England, and all of these kings and princes and aristocrats were inviting him to parties, and he cusses himself out because he blurted out how prosperous America was and how they had basically beaten the crown. And so he basically gave away, you know, the national secret of how America was made strong by refusing to dance to the tune of crazy aristocrats. And once they learned that, they figured out how they could sap America. And so in Ben Franklin's autobiography, he talks about after he gets back, sure enough, he saw all of these, you know, the strengths of America disappear into smoke because we were still believing the numbers of England. In other words, we were dancing to the tune of the British pound instead of the American dollar. And in fact, there are a lot of people that really dislike, not Andrew Jackson, Hamilton. Because Hamilton, you remember Hamilton was the first U.S. Treasury Secretary. And right. And he got, he suckered America, I won't say suckered, but he started borrowing money from England. Now, a brand new country that beats the crap out of a king all of a sudden starts borrowing money from that king, that's dumb. That is plain dumb. And Ben Franklin basically saw the result of that, where America was being leached, colonized again by, a pack of phonies over the ocean. So when you're talking about Owen, you mentioned he came from Scotland. And right after the American Revolution, Scotland was trying to pull out of England too, right? And so Robert Owens was trying to figure a way that they could create their own money, that they didn't have to dance to the British pound, that they could collectively come up with their own value of life and not have to dance to the tune of a crazy king or the successor to a crazy king. I think Henry the Third or King George the Third was gone by the time I don't have Robert Owen's info in front of me, but if I remember right, you said 1824 it fell apart in America.
26.
So he was probably trying to do his Scottish version in what, 1810 or something like that. I'm not sure, but you see what I'm saying, though, where the Scottish were trying to break free from, you know, America got free, so why can't Scotland, right? Mm-hmm. So along those lines, his experiment in socialism was basically trying to come up with the money of Scotland so that they didn't have to deal with British pounds. And, it's the history is replete with country after country that are trying to avoid being run by the money masters of Switzerland or the money masters of the Rothschilds or, you know, the money lenders of the world, let's say. And they, you know, it's trying to come up with your own value. So the Robert Owens experiment, you know, he gets out of, if I remember right, he got run out of Scotland. He didn't fail in Scotland. Scotland. He got run out of Scotland. I think he had to run for his life, didn't he?
Yeah, you know, it depends on who you ask, but yeah, that's definitely one version of the story.
So he came to America to try to, try to figure a way to still beat the king, you know, thumb his nose from, 3,000 miles away, and apparently, and I'm only guessing, because I'd have to reread Ben Franklin's autobiography to remember if he had opened his mouth before the revolution or after it. But, you know, there were a lot of the, we have founding fathers and we have founding scoundrels too. You know, there Benedict Arnold was one, and if I remember, Governor Morris didn't come out with a real clean reputation, because he was also basically allowing money to be borrowed from England instead of coming up with a solid American dollar that didn't have anything to do with those phonies. And, and basically where we are today is we're still fighting the monarchy plus the crown, or the British, when we deal with Saudi Arabia. Because if you look at those Saudi so-called kings, those guys were only put in power in like 1923. And they were given king status by the British. And and in fact, I don't remember if it was in 1957. Some top secret documents got released that showed that the King of England was really a pal of Adolf Hitler, and the two of them were trying to get the kingdom back in Germany. Because you remember, at the end of World War One, they had the Kaiser, which is the king, and he was the cousin of the British king. And when he lost World War One, he got run out of office, and the people of Germany finally got a republic. It was called the Weimar Republic. Well, the British and the aristocrats of the world were doing their dangdest to make sure that they could get that kingdom back, because they're just like roaches, you know, kings and aristocrats are some of the biggest welfare cheats there are. And so you look at the Saudi Arabians, and Saudi Arabians are just, they're controlling almost every part of American foreign policy right now. This whole Russian business, this whole ISIS business, the whole Venezuela, the whole Iran business, they're doing a huge amount to dominate American foreign policy and to make us spend money on terrible things, you know, like giving up our civil liberties so that they can make money. And, you know, they're polluting us to death. They're making us pay. Out here in California, we're closing in on $5 a gallon for gasoline. I've heard it's in the dollar something, you know, down in Oklahoma or someplace, but it's closing in on $5 a gallon out here. And they're doing it to sap California. And so it's, you know, the Saudi Arabians are some evil friggin' people. They've been given king status by a pack of phony kings from England, and Americans are falling for it.
Yeah, and, you know, as far as that interest goes, again, like you said, you know, where did Saudi Arabia come from? So I think to say that they are steering foreign policy is giving too much credit. That's what some people are led to believe, but
you know, Venezuela. If you just look at capitalism, you know, it needs competition in order to keep prices stable, right? So in foreign policy of the world, Saudi Arabia wants to crush its competitors. The biggest competitor it has in the entire continent of South America is Venezuela. They've got the biggest pool of oil. There is no reason for Venezuela to be going broke if they've got the biggest pool of oil. But we, the people of America, have been suckered into fighting with the Venezuelans because the Saudis want us to do it. And,
or is that the story that we're supposed to buy? Because,
true. I mean,
Saudi Arabia doesn't control their oil, doesn't control the markets.
No, but it controls who did foreign policy. And the idea that we've done an embargo against Venezuela is totally because of the Saudis. They want to crush the competition from the Saudis. So now it is illegal. You can't go to a gas station in America and buy Venezuelan oil. even though it only is, what, 400, it's more than 400 miles away, but it's 1,000 miles away or whatever, there's no reason, instead of being 12,000 miles away in Saudi Arabia, there is no reason for Americans to not be able to buy Venezuelan oil, especially if we're considered capitalist country. But we are intentionally refusing to buy, and we're making sure that nobody in the world can buy Venezuelan oil. They've made it a crime to buy Venezuelan oil. Now, that isn't it's not competition, it's not capitalism, and it's dancing to the tune of the Saudis. And the same is true for Iran. You know, Iran wants to sell their oil on the open market, and the only reason we're not doing it is because the Saudi Arabians want us to embargo them. These people, we are dancing to the tune of the oil and gas boys, and what's worse is it's oil and gas boys dominated by a phony monarchy.
Mm. Well, I would respectfully disagree with the last bit there. I don't think that they drive. No, the phony monarchy is real, you know, and I mean, I've talked about Philby of Arabia as a, I don't know, jumping off point to understanding that. But, basically the Wahhabi Saudi Empire, propped up by British intelligence and British intrigue over a period of decades and even, you know, more than a century.
More than a century, yeah.
Yeah, but as far as the Saudis controlling the oil markets, I think that's it's the multinational corporations that have controlled oil since oil became a thing that still control it. So
well,
I think we're fed that story and
right.
We're supposed to buy
yeah.
into it, but anyway.
They're being, you know, those corporations are being bought up left and right, so who dominates them? You know, shareholders of each of the corporations, who's on their board of directors, who's doing the steering. In law, there's the expression de facto. It means it exists. And whether or not you believe that we're following Saudi Arabia's foreign policy to embargo Venezuela or Iran, we're doing it. And
well,
where that stems from, you know, I'll debate you on that. I still think it's the oil and gas boys who are in the hands of the Saudis, and those oil companies are being bought up left and right. They've got these dumb deals. Look at Epstein now; there's blackmail guiding many of these deals. You don't even know why they decided to do the wrong thing. When it comes to somebody like Epstein, you know, blackmailing a corporate CEO or blackmailing a president or blackmailing, you know, policymakers, we organized crime is running so much of this country now, and then, you know, is organized crime doing the duty of monarchies, or are they blackmailing the monarchies now too?
No, that's backwards. Backwards, the monarchies were created or propped up, as we said, you know, by the same forces that have, ironically, you know, been behind the proliferation of this socialist propaganda and democratic socialism and so on. So,
well, you mean the creation of a value for our lives instead of the numbers that they want us to use?
I'm
see,
not
that's
sure
where
what you
I think
that.
It comes to Owens. Again, you know, you go back to Owens' original principle. He was also trying to break free from England, but in Scotland. So the only way they could do it, he took a bunch of starving people in one town, and they said, let's build something, and let's make it good, and let's create our own life instead of having to dance to the tune of the king. And or it might have been a queen at the time, but either way, the monarch. And you know, he got crushed. He had to run for his life. He came to America to try to kick it off again, and apparently some trickery in the East Coast was able to crush him. I can't remember. Was he in Pennsylvania, maybe, or New Hampshire? He was way up northeast, right?
Mm-hmm.
Robert Owen?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly where he was from, but I remember he was, you know, shortly after the American Revolution, and And that's why it reminded me of that Ben Franklin thing. Because, you know, like I was saying, Hamilton got us suckered into borrowing money from England, and it got us into nothing but trouble. We do not want to compare ourselves to a monarch. Not only are we better than that, but they have to, in fact, I've been actually testing this idea. We ought to offer statehood to the Saudi Arabian people. Not only could we kick the ass of some phony kings, but we would actually give freedom to a whole different section of the world that those people would probably kiss us 100 different ways, man, to get free from those evil tyrants.
Well, it's an interesting thought, but it's a political weapon and an ideological weapon, a mind virus, the Wahhabi ideology in particular, that is wielded upon the world, and so that won't happen. Yeah. Anyway, I appreciate your call, David. Thank you.
Yeah, good week.
Stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Welcome back. Robert Owen is an interesting study. He, you know, he was influenced by Jeremy Bentham. Bentham was actually one of the investors in one of his communes. And, you know, Jeremy Bentham, the Panopticon dude, utilitarian dude, creepy weird dude, you know, with his auto icon. these people with their ideas. Robert Owen's an interesting, somewhat enigmatic figure that you, I think when you consider the era in which he lived and the ideals he espoused, the company he kept, like Jeremy Bentham, and for him to consider his views original is interesting. You know, you, I guess what I'm saying is, you know, you have, I mean, there's influence. His views allegedly influenced by a number of folks. Bentham, obviously, Isaac Newton, and many others. But, you know, there's this body of work and effort, and why, you know, so it begs further investigation. And it's been a while, admittedly. It's been, I think, more than 10 years since the last time that I really dove down the rabbit hole of Robert Owen. But it's just interesting how, you know, he's considered by some the father of modern socialism, kind of like, you know, speaking of, I don't know, American interlopers, if you will, like Alexander Hamilton, who's considered the father of modern, the modern administrative state. Robert Owen is a curious figure. You know, there's this, all of this, you know, there's this perception that's created, and there seems to be no substance behind it, which is a curious, you know, you have to wonder why is this background missing? You know, where did all of this effort and energy come from? Traveling from continent to continent in this company that he kept, and yet we hear nothing about all of that in the story of Robert Owen. If you get any of the story of Robert Owen, that's a curiosity to me. The history of Robert Owen, largely occluded. And to me, it's kind of the Streisand effect at work, where, you know, what is missing is a glaring omission, it seems. So anyway, and basically that's a simple way to say, you know, again, the utilitarian socialist concept, there is no such thing. You know, there's always force, there's always intrigue, propaganda, deception, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, that's why you want to just tell this part of the story and leave out all of the substantive background. That makes sense. Anyway, we'll get back to education, the Rees Committee, and the Fabians and democratic socialism in tomorrow's broadcast. I hope it was informative. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.